The Lord be with you. Jesus said to his disciples, "In a little while, you will no longer see me." Sometimes there are people we don't want to see anymore. Yeah? We have for the past month been reading about the relationship between King Saul of Israel and David, his young warrior. And that relationship has had a lot of pain in it. Saul very clearly is jealous of David. And Saul doesn't want to see David anymore, and so Saul tries to kill David in a number of ways. First, he sends David out on suicide missions, and then he just tries to kill David directly, then he hunts him down. And David, for his part, realizes maybe he shouldn't be seeing Saul right now either, and so he has to run away into the wilderness and then to another country. Sometimes we don't want to see people anymore because of the pain that they've caused us, or maybe because of the pain of who we become when we are around them. And while most people don't have the kind of relationship that David and Saul have, most of us do have someone in our life that we would rather not see again. My parents, when I was 3 years old, realized they didn't want to see each other anymore. Yeah, they got divorced because of the pain that they had caused one another, and I think also perhaps because of the pain that they felt and who they had become when they were with the other person. And when we stop seeing maybe those people that we don't want to see anymore, we maybe have a variety of reactions. Jesus says that when the world stops seeing him, the world is going to rejoice. They're going to be real happy that Jesus is gone. And he tells his disciples, "But I know that you will weep and mourn." Now, David has been not wanting to see Saul for a while now. And at the end of the book of 1 Samuel, King Saul dies. He's killed along with his son Jonathan. And the beginning of the book of 2 Samuel, which we read today, is what happens when David finds out about the death of King Saul. Because you see, there is a messenger who learns of King Saul's death, and he thinks to himself, "Well, you know what? David is going to be so enthusiastic that he never has to see Saul again that I should be the one to tell him, because I'm going to get a reward for bringing him this happy news. Not only will I get a reward for bringing him this happy news, I'm going to claim falsely that I killed King Saul, and David's going to be so grateful he's going to give me massive rewards for this." It's worth noting, I do not pick the texts that we read each Sunday, yeah? There is a book that tells us what text we read each Sunday. I mention this because this text is about David's response to hearing about the assassination of his political rival, which may or may not be relevant this week, yeah? The messenger expects to be rewarded by David. But when David hears that King Saul, his political rival, has been killed, David's response is to mourn. He writes a song of lamentation, which is to say, a song about how sad he is that his political rival has been killed. And I think maybe there's 3 reasons David does this. And I think the first is obviously political, yeah? King Saul, for all his problems, was the king of Israel, God's anointed. David is going to be the next king of Israel. He is also God's anointed. If there is a precedent of celebrating whenever someone kills the king of Israel, this is bad news for David, yes? And so David says to the messenger who claims to kill King Saul, he says, "Oh, you want a reward for having killed King Saul? Well, here's your reward. You get a complimentary beheading." Yeah? Free of charge, I'll separate your head from your body. That's his reward. And then David says, "I'm going to teach everyone in Israel to sing this song that I wrote praising my political opponent." And I think he does that because at the end of the day, for all the problems he had with King Saul, Saul was still the king of Israel. And Israel is like a family. If one parent starts speaking poorly of another parent, it's going to just break the family. And I will say, for all that my parents caused each other pain and they needed to stop seeing each other, they have always spoken well of each other in my presence. They have always praised one another. And I think it's because they understood, like David, that for the sake of us as a unit, I needed to hear only good things after they had stopped harming one another. Yeah. So I think the first reason David is sad at Saul's death is political, but I think the second is personal, because you see, David never wanted to be Saul's enemy. It's that Saul had within him a sickness. Today we might call it mental illness. The Bible describes it as this overwhelming jealousy. And as many times as David tried to say to Saul, "Saul, I'm not your enemy. I want to work with you. I want to help you." Eventually something would snap in Saul and he would turn on David again and try to kill him. And so David just said, "For my own safety, I can't be in this relationship anymore." But that's not how David wanted the relationship to end. David wanted to reconcile. It's just in this life he couldn't. And now Saul is dead, and that means that David will never have a chance in this life to reconcile with Saul. And so I think perhaps he sings this song of lamentation, the song of praise for Saul, as a way to tell Saul how he felt. Say, "We had our problems, Saul, but I saw in you the best. I saw that God had chosen you for a reason to be king, even if you couldn't be my king." And I think part of the reason my parents have always spoken well of each other is because they didn't want to get divorced, right? They weren't happy about getting divorced. It's just they knew they had so much pain in the relationship, they couldn't hold on to it anymore. And that saddens them. And so though they can't be together as a couple, I think through speaking well of each other through me, they hope to in some way let the other person know that they saw that person that at one time they wanted to commit their life to. And I think the third reason that David sings the song of lamentation at the death of Saul is a collateral reason. You see, Saul was the father of Jonathan, who died with his father. And Jonathan was David's best friend. And because David could no longer see Saul anymore, it meant he could no longer see Jonathan. And David spent months of his life avoiding seeing Saul, and in the process, avoiding seeing his best friend Jonathan, and now both have died. The truth of the matter is no one exists in isolation. We all exist within relationships. And so it means when we see someone, we're often going to see some other folks with them. But on the flip side, it means if we avoid seeing someone, we will necessarily avoid seeing the people that that person is in relationship with. Right? My parents discovered the truth of this. They realized they had to stop seeing each other, and what that meant on a very practical level was they got to see about half as much of me as a child as I moved back and forth between them. But I noticed something as I got older. When I graduated from high school, I was in the town where my dad and my stepmom lived, and so my mom came along with a huge chunk of my Mexican family, and they all came. We had this big celebration together, and that was great to be together as a family. And then a similar thing happened when I graduated from college. My dad and my stepmom's side, they all came, and my mom's side, they all came, and we celebrated as a big family. But as I got older and continued to hit milestones, there were fewer and fewer times that my mom, my stepdad, or my mom, my dad, and my stepmom would all be together in the same place. So when I graduated from seminary, it was just my mom's side of the family. My dad and my stepmom didn't make it. And when I was ordained to be a pastor in New York, it was once again just my mom's side of the family who came. And when I moved out to here to Chico, it was just my dad who moved me down. My mom didn't come. And when I was installed as a pastor here, actually neither of them came. And I remember, this is how I remember. I remember I would have phone calls with my parents and I would say, hey, you know, I've got this big event coming up in my life. Will you make it? And they'd say, well, you know, is your mom going to be there? Or my mom would say, is your dad coming? And I'd say, you know, yes. And then there'd be some hesitation and they wouldn't be able to make it. And I will say, I called my parents before the sermon, yeah? I called them to ask them about this because I was like, is this how you remember it? And both of them said no. No, I would not miss out on your life event just because your other parent was there. What? And I pressed them a little more on it because I was like, I kind of remember that's how it went down. And they said, you know, my mom said, you know, sometimes I would go and see you and I would go by myself because your dad has remarried and has a happy, strong marriage and I'm, you know, single. And she said, and that would make me uncomfortable. And so I would start inviting members of my side of the family. And my mom's Mexican, so when, like, you know, when she invites members of the family, it's a lot of people. And I was like, that makes sense, Mom. And I talked to my dad, and he said, well, he's like, I don't like big crowds. And every time your mom would come to this event, she'd bring this massive crowd of all her family members. And that just made me uncomfortable. And so, yeah, maybe I did say I wouldn't come and find another time to come and celebrate with you. And it was interesting because, you know, for all these events that only one would come to and not the other, at my wedding, they did all come, but my wedding was big enough that they could kind of have separate camps, right? So I brought a picture, right? This is Annalisa and me and my mom at our wedding, and then there's a picture, the next picture is Annalisa and me and my dad and my stepmom at our wedding, and that was kind of how it worked, right? I had the Iretas on my mom's side all hung out together, and the Colahans on my dad's side all hung out together, and they didn't really have to connect. No one exists in isolation. We all exist in relationship. And what that means is, when we see someone, we're going to see the people who are connected to them. And Jesus tells his disciples after he says, you know, in a little while you'll no longer see me. And then he says, and then after a little while, you'll see me again. And he says this to all his disciples, and the promise for us is that someday we will see Christ again. We will have life once more after death. But because there are all these other people, millions upon billions of people in this world who are also connected to Jesus, when we see Jesus again, we're going to see them too. And so the first corollary of seeing Jesus again is good news. It means that we will see for all eternity all those people whom in this life we have missed. And the second corollary is maybe less good news, which is that we will see again for all eternity all those people whom in this life we have avoided. Yeah? And we will get a choice. We will get a choice when we die, when Jesus comes and welcomes us home, welcomes us in to the greatest party that has ever existed. We will get a choice when we see who is at that party. We will have a choice to say, oh, so-and-so is going to be there. You know, maybe I don't want to participate. We could say that. Jesus doesn't want you to say that. Jesus wants you to come and be a part of the celebration. Jesus wants you to trust that it will be worth it to see even that person. And so Jesus gives us an even better promise. Jesus says that death is like a woman giving birth to a child. There's a lot of pain involved in dying, just as there's a lot of pain in giving birth. And having talked to my wife, what I hear is there's a lot of pain in the 9 months leading up to giving birth. And as you all know, there's a lot of pain in this life. But Jesus promises, though you have that pain now, on the other side you will have joy, because just as that mother who gives birth to her child is in pain when she holds that child in her arms, the joy of holding that new life is so great, she no longer has room to hold on to the pain that she has experienced. That's the promise. That the pain we have now is real, yes. The pain of broken relationships, be they in our political sphere, be they in our personal life, be they even with our own selves. That pain is real, but it won't last forever. It will be turned into joy, because in the life to come, Jesus promises us, no one will be able to take that joy from us, not even that person that we have avoided seeing for so long. Because we will have so much joy, we won't be able to hold on to the pain. And I have seen this for myself, because just over 2 years ago, I was planning Sophia's baptism. And so I called up my mom and I said, "Hey, Mom, will you be able to come to Sophia's baptism?" And she said, "Well, I would love to come to Sophia's baptism. Do you think your dad and your stepmom are going to come?" And I said, "Yeah, I hope they will. Will you come?" And she said, "Yeah, I'll come." And then I called up my dad, my stepmom, and I said, we're going to baptize Sophia. Will you come?" And they said, "Yeah, well, we'd of course love to come. Is your mom going to be there?" And I said, "Yeah, my mom's going to be there." And they said, "Okay, we'll come." And I prepared myself the same thing that happened at the wedding, yeah, which is we have these sort of two separate camps, and they come into the church at the same time, and they leave at the church, and never the twain shall meet, that kind of thing. But something happened around this baptismal font, which is to say my family, my mom, my dad, my stepmom, Aunt Lisa's family, we all gathered around this font. It's not that big, yeah? It is tight quarters. And something happened, which was my stepmom saw that my mom was kind of pushed to the back, that she was far away from Sophia and she was far away from my dad. And my stepmom stepped back and made a hole for my mom and gestured for her to come in. She didn't say a word, but my mom stepped into that gap that my stepmom had made. And I saw in my mom tears roll down her eyes. And together as a family, we baptized Sophia. And then afterwards, we had a reception at my house. And I will say this, by my father's standards, the reception we had at our house was not small. A lot of people came to this reception, including my dad, including my stepmom, including my mom. And they didn't just come, they hung around. And they talked with other people for a while, but then eventually those other people left, and they stayed, just them. And they talked. For the first time that I can remember in my whole life, my three parents just talked. I know they have had pain in their relationships with each other, but in that moment, all they had room to hold on to was the joy of their granddaughter. They didn't have room for anything else. That is what Jesus promises us that the life to come will be. Filled with so much joy that we will not have room enough in our hands or our hearts to hold on to the pain that we knew in this life. And so may we prepare for that joyous day. May we prepare our hearts in the way that David did, by singing songs of praise, even for the people that we can't see in this life, so that when Jesus invites us to join them in the feast that has no end, we will be able to receive that invitation with joy. Amen.